Chapter 11 Swim. Later that day, after enough fish had been caught for everyone to have lunch and dinner, Tuljapa called a halt to the fishing. A few people asked him why. The man explained that they had what they needed, so taking more would be a bad thing. Makwa wasn't sure he understood, but Saruth seemed to approve, so he shrugged and coiled the line. That was that, and the fishing was over. With the water clear to do so, Shimna decided to go swimming. She started by running and leaping from Cooley's shell to grab a vine that hung from a nearby tree. Makwa watched as she swung far out over the water and let go to splash down with a gleeful shriek. He shivered.
Saruth, why would anyone want to do that?
She seems to be having fun, wouldn't you agree?
Shimna surfaced and waved to Makwa.
Come swim, the water is good today.
He shook his head. I don't want to. She made her way back to the edge of Cooley's shell and climbed up to give Makwa a dripping wet hug.
Oh, come on, Makwa. It's fun.
Makwa would have hit her right then if she were another boy, because soaked as she was, he was now the mutual victim of all the water. With a growl, he pushed her away. She snorted and turned her head to look away.
Fine. I don't know why you're such a grumpy one. But if you don't want to play, then I don't want you to.
She turned her back on Makwa and made a fluid dive into the water that cast only a faint ripple across the surface of the pool. A little way out, she surfaced and swam around, making a game of touching different trees as fast as she could. Saruth made Makwa jump as he spoke from behind him.
Makwa, do you know how to swim?
He tried to rub the water from his fur without removing his armored clothing and uttered a little growl. Saruth lifted a brow and then narrowed his eyes.
That's what I thought.
He shrugged.
Time to learn, then. Go ahead and strip down to your pantaloons. It'll be easier to swim without being encumbered by your armor.
Makwa looked over his shoulder at the man and widened his eyes.
What?
Saruth chuckled.
It's part of being a man, Makwa. You must know how to swim in order to help others in case they need it. You must also know how to swim to protect yourself. I find it surprising that a boy from a fishing city doesn't know how to swim. How did that come to be?
Makwa's embarrassment rose, and he felt heat under his pelt while his tail lashed.
My father drowned at sea. Mother never let me swim because she didn't want me to drown, too. I don't even like baths, Saruth.
That I know.
Saruth scrunched his nose and then offered a sympathetic smile.
Well, then, it's time to move on beyond that and make sure you don't suffer the same fate. I wouldn't let you drown, Makwa, because I know how to swim, and I would save you. Go on, and remove the armor so I can show you.
Makwa laid his ears back as he clenched his fists and closed his eyes.
No, I don't want to. I won't do it.
Saruth shrugged.
Okay, then.
Makwa felt a surge of relief as he breathed out a long sigh, and then felt a heavy shove from behind that sent him out over the water. He yelped and opened his eyes to see the murky surface of the liquid flying past below him. Out of instinct, he took a deep breath and closed his eyes an instant before hitting it. He was terrified, and his blood froze in his veins as he sank below the surface with his head pointed at the bottom. Had Saruth betrayed him? The question came, even though deep down he knew it couldn't be true. There was little time to think about it any more, though, because soon he found himself needing air. He opened his eyes again and saw light from above. He reached for it, clawing and pulling at the water as though it were sand and he was trying to climb. Closer and closer the light came, and just when he thought he needed air more than ever before, he broke the surface and took a deep, gasping breath. He heard Saruth's voice.
Move your arms back and forth, palms down. Kick with your feet.
He looked around in a frantic search for the shell and safety, and spotted Saruth over his shoulder. The man stood on the shell with a hand to his mouth.
Don't panic. Kick with your feet. Move your arms back and forth.
He was tiring, but somehow managed to kick his feet in a way as to turn to face Saruth.
Try this.
Saruth moved his arms as though claiming a circle around his body as his own space, palms down, angled toward the directions they went. Makwa tried it as he went under again, and he came right back up.
Good, good. Try using your tail, too. Every little bit helps. That's it.
Makwa felt the movements working and spit out a mouthful of swamp water.
Saruth, if I live through this, you're dead!
Uh-huh.
Saruth nodded.
Focus, Makwa. Move your arms and legs together. Swim back to the shell.
He mimed reaching forward as if to part heavy curtains before him.
like this.
Makwa hissed in rage at the man, but Saruth rather had a point, so murder would have to wait. He focused on what he was doing, growling in annoyance. In that moment, he got a rhythm going and found that if he kicked his legs in counterpoint to the sweeping movements of his arms, he didn't have to work as hard to stay surfaced. He looked down to watch the movements and felt the water flow around his short fur. He had to admit that Saruth was right about the armor. It was terrible in the water. He looked up and caught sight of Saruth. The man was pulling his robe over his head. He now wore just his loincloth-like undergarments as he watched Makwa with a grin.
"Come on!"
Some of the travelers who hadn't been watching now were, and Lady Duroth came over and started jabbering at Saruth while swatting at him with her handbag.
"Indecency! You're a horrible man and cruel to children. Put that robe back on and go save that little hooligan instead of acting like one. If I were that child's guardian, I'd..."
Makwa took a conscious moment to stop his talkie from focusing on her, and contemplated longer on the matter closer at hand. He found that he could kick his feet opposite the direction he wanted to maneuver, and swap his fanning movements around a bit by pulling his arms under him and then sweeping back. This allowed forward momentum that was to his liking. He worked at it for a little while and got to the edge of Cooley's shell in time to look up and see Lady DeRoth's servants trying to calm her. He pulled himself up, dripping water everywhere and feeling quite the conqueror. The angry woman looked over at Makwa and crossed her arms, ceasing her attacks. She clutched her handbag and glowered at Saruth.
"If only laws applied here."
Saruth took advantage of the lull in the fat woman's swatting spree, turned to Makwa to grin at him, and ruffled his ears.
"The boy from the fishing village survived the water's embrace."
Water went all over the place as he looked up past Saruth's arm and gave his most threatening look, complete with ears back and fangs bared. He punched him in the arm in a half-hearted attack.
"You nearly killed me! It could have been a watery grave! I could be dinner for the great fish!"
Saruth grunted, rubbed his arm, and lifted a brow.
"Are you done being dramatic?"
He hissed at Saruth and huffed a vague growl. A moment later, he looked down at himself and felt a slow grin creep over his muzzle. He could swim.
"Thanks for teaching me how to swim."
Saruth shifted his ears into their perch position.
"You're welcome. You did well."
He smiled and turned his white furred back on Makwa, standing on the very edge of the Tortanga shell as he stretched an arm over his head, gripping that elbow with the other.
"You might need it some day."
Makwa considered pushing Saruth into the water, but decided not to, and moved to empty one of his ears again.
"Saruth, why did you take off your robe?"
Lady DeRoth growled, stalked up beside Saruth, and glared at him. Her expression was one of a pot under pressure. Her mouth worked as she seemed at a loss for what to yell first while she pointed a finger at him. Saruth held up a finger to the woman, glanced back at Makwa, and then spread his hands, palms up, with a shrug at shoulder level.
"Because I thought I might have to jump in and get you if you didn't learn fast enough, and also because you would want to push me in once you got back if you did. You're smart. So I was betting more on the latter."
Lady DeRoth exploded into a gibbering tirade at Saruth, who laid his ears back and weathered the storm while the woman's bodyguards looked away uncomfortably. Makwa smirked and called to the man over the yelling,
"You're right about the second part, but I decided not to. I have a better idea."
Saruth pointedly ignored the woman and looked ahead to watch Shimna dive from a tree root across the small body of water. He flicked an ear back in Makwa's direction.
"What's that, Makwa?"
Makwa laughed under his breath, licked his nose as he rubbed his hands together, and crept away with his tail wriggling in his wake.
"Makwa?"
Saruth looked over his shoulder and his eyes went wide. "Makwa, don't!" There was an anguished wail as Lady Alita DeRoth sailed over the edge and plunged into the water like a screeching fat scrackle. A huge splash sloshed up onto the edge of Cooley's shell. Her bodyguards moved to save her through the mirth they struggled with and failed to stifle. How Tuljapa ever slept through all the racket that day, Makwa never knew. Shimna's calling, the swimming lessons with his yelling, the verbal abuse Alita DeRoth served up before and after she was tugged back onto the shell by Saruth and her servants, said servants trying in vain not to laugh. It was a miracle the man could hear himself think, let alone sleep in that tent. Once the sun's rays were gone from behind the edges of the trees on the far horizon, and the low-swung shadows gripped the travelers in darkness, the man appeared and looked the picture of the well-rested guide. He used a bow and spindle to light some tinder and used it to light torches. He loaded the firewood that some of the travelers had found and lit a big fire in the metal basin on Cooley's back before he turned to the crowd and announced that it was time to depart. Everyone gathered their things and then moved to sit upon the wooden benches once more, till Joppa had everyone count off to assure that none were missing. Once he was sure they were all accounted for, he moved to the front of the Tortanga and stood before his seat. He began a slow chant and waved his hands in the air in that odd way that both woke Cooley and petitioned him to move. Once they were on their way, Shimna came to Makwa from the tent, where she had slept a good portion of the afternoon. She nosed up to him and hugged him as she asked if he wanted to go swimming sometime and learn more about it from her. Saruth gave him a look when he overheard the question that told him he would be a fool to decline.
I would like that. He blinked as a thought struck him. Will you show me the plants again too, Shimna?
She nodded and flicked her tail in a happy arc.
Makwa, I do believe you've got an admirer. At times, such things can reflect a fortuitous boon of destiny, you know.
He stuck his tongue out at Saruth.
What did he say, Makwa?
I'm not really sure.
Morin arose on the horizon, and its warm aqua and lavender hues spread beautiful illumination throughout the nighttime landscape. Out in the distance, Makwa saw yellowish lights in the night that seemed to dance around and avoid shafts of the colorful moonlight. The shadows were lit as though they had luminous eyes. As the band of travelers lumbered near upon the mighty Tortanga, one of the lights came closer. It appeared, then vanished, then illuminated a large tree trunk a little way off before it disappeared again. There was a buzzing, thrumming sound, like a bug flying, and then the light appeared only a few feet away from Makwa as it went zooming by in the air. Makwa watched as the big beetle kept going and then faded into a dim glow before standing out again against the darkness once more. Shimna leaned near him.
That's a Zula beetle. You'll see more the closer we get to home.
Makwa nodded and looked into the far-off night as the large insects seemed to perform a sort of aerial dance. He listened, and nocturnal sounds abounded in his awareness. There were the croaks of crocados, of course, as well as the buzzing of Zulas and other bugs. There was a screeching in the distance, and Makwa noticed Shimna give a little shudder in reaction. Whatever it was, he didn't want to meet it either. A soft breeze flowed through the trees and tickled his whiskers, the winds bringing with it the scent of many strange plants and animals to his twitching nose. Shimna moved and asked her father if he thought it would rain. He nodded and turned to the travelers.
In a time soon, water falls from the sky. Make ready more wood for the fire. Put things to stay dry into the shelter.
Some nodded and did so, while others, including certain royalty, did not. Makwa watched as Shimna went into the tent and pulled out a large metal cone that he had noticed before, but for which he didn't really understand the purpose.
What's that for? It covers. Help me.
He did, and followed the girl's lead as they took it by the wooden handles and placed it over the fire so that it rested on a set of metal rods poking up from the basin and covered the flames with a small hole at the top and a slot to see them in the sides.
That's clever.
Shimna oversaw the placement of wood, using a metal poker to adjust it in the basin and make the flames hotter and stronger, and then went to her father and got more orders. Next came erecting the cover for the benches. It was an interesting arrangement, the poles falling into well-placed pits in Cooley's shell, the thick cloth resting over it in a sloped covering that pushed the water down either side of the Tortanga. There were flaps in the back that attached to the tent behind and a sort of covered hallway that draped almost to the shell below. Even though he had helped Shimna set it up, Makwa was impressed for how well thought out it was. For what he'd imagined as backward swamp people, the Regentans certainly were deft. After that, both Shimna and Makwa got a much smaller cover for Toljapa and pulled out 4 small oil lamps to replace the corner torches. They set up the shelter, and Shimna showed Makwa how to check the oil in the lamps and light them without getting burned. They set the lamps in the corner torch mounts and put out the torches, then placed them under the fire basin. They hadn't been done for more than a quarter hour when Makwa looked up, saw clouds beginning to fill the sky, and heard thunder in the distance. He looked over at Shimna as she sat down next to him and put a certain very colorful hat on her head. He stared at the hat, one thought leading to another.
What is it, Makwa?
He laughed. I was just wondering what you and your dad said to each other when I was done chasing you. Shimna covered her mouth with a hand and gave a little yip as her eyes widened. He stared at her, ears perked. She lowered her eyes to look at her hand and then drew it away from her mouth.
If you are so curious, I will tell you. Just do not tell my mother about it.
Makwa nodded.
He asked me if I was stealing. I said nothing. So he asked me again. I knew I was in trouble, but I didn't want to get caught. I told him I was not stealing. He knew I wasn't telling the truth, so he asked me if I wanted a spanking, and then told me if I did not, I should give back what I took from you.
Her ears lay back as she thought about it, and it reminded Makwa of himself in several similar situations. He nudged her shoulder and smiled.
I'm glad I met you, Shimna. It's good to have friends like you. I never got along with a girl before.
Her ears flicked, one perking up while the other lay back.
Why not? Are we so difficult?
She crossed her arms and leveled a look indicating that an explanation was a wise idea. He drew in a slow breath as he took the moment to choose his words.
It isn't that, Shimna. It's just that I've never had any female friends. In fact,
he looked down,
I've never had many friends at all. When my mother was alive, I helped her with the bakery from the time I could speak, so I didn't have much time to play with other kids. Also, most girls I met didn't want to play ball or play pranks, so I never had much to do with them because they didn't like the games I did. Until I met you, I never knew a girl who liked to swing from vines or climb trees or sneak onto balconies.
They shared a grin.
If I had, I'd have gotten along great with her. There's also a thing that happened when my mother died. Nobody's parents wanted them to spend much time with me because I was a thief and they suspected it.
Her grin faded into a look of sadness, and then became a soft smile. Thunder boomed overhead, and rain began to sprinkle down against the bench tent.
I like you, Makwa. You are very good, and I hope you are my friend for the longest time.
Light flashed and showed her smile for a moment before a closer eruption of thunder made her yip and cling to him. She licked her nose.
I'm sorry.
Makwa rubbed one of her ears and wrapped an arm around her.
It's fine.
A yawn took him and he stood, stretching out.
Time for bed. I'll see you tomorrow.
She nodded and went to talk to her father. He crept into the tent before anyone else did and found a warm sleeping fur. After taking off boots and armor, he wrapped himself in it and drifted off into a well-deserved slumber.